We made this.
You're listening to Free with this month's issue. As always, please support the bands and artists featured in each episode by buying their records and going to their gigs. Each episode we'll be adding all available tracks to our ongoing Spotify playlist, which you can find on WeDidPodcast.com. You can also find our other episodes and podcasts there. If you want to agree with us, or more likely argue with us, or even appear in a future episode, you can find us on Twitter at This Month's Issue and Facebook at Free with This Month's Issue. Also, if you enjoy the podcast, then let people know. Like, subscribe, review it on iTunes, tattoo it on your forehead, etc. Right, let's get on with it then. Hello, welcome to Free With This Month's Issue, which may confuse a lot of you again, unless you listen to the last one where we hijacked the Kerrang Back Issues feed, although it won't confuse you if you're on the Free With This Month's Issue feed, because this is going out on both podcast feeds. For those of you on the Kerrang Back Issues feed, Free With This Month's Issue is a podcast where me, Colin, and usually my co-host Ian, although he is on paternity leave at the moment, basically have a different guest each month, and we listen to old free CDs and tape from Kerrang, Metal Hammer, NME, Q, that kind of thing, and find the various sort of horrors and delights within. But this is a special bonus episode. It's our second collaborative episode with Stephen from Kerrang Back Issues. How you doing, Steve?
Good, thanks. How you doing?
Not bad,
thanks,
mate.
Thanks for having me back on.
Well, it's your feed as well, mate. It's thanks for having me back on. So, for the Free With This Month's Issue listeners, if they haven't listened to Kerrang Back Issues, do you want to tell people a bit about it?
Yeah, sure. Oh God, it was a lockdown project where I was at my parents' garage and I found all of the Kerrangs that I used to have, which was about 6 years worth, and I thought they were too good to do nothing with.
Yeah. So,
because I'm a white male, I was like, right, I'm going to start a podcast. That's what white males do apparently. And I had nothing else to do because we were locked down. So I started a podcast. And yeah, basically, I go through an issue. I always get these two confused. I go through an issue of the magazine each week that corresponds with that week, but from 94, or we're currently in 95 at the moment. I basically just go through the issue for about an hour or so, pull out all the funny stuff if I can, read some of the reviews, read some of the interviews, drop in my own 2 pence worth when I feel like it's worth dropping in. not that often, because I don't want to get everyone like too involved in my diatribe. But you know, it's good. It's a good podcast. Good for me, because I really love doing it.
I
really enjoy it. It makes me laugh. The way Kerrang talk about things, I think it's a really good snapshot of like music in that time as well. We've done all of 1994 now, and that was just a whirlwind. Because
yes,
when you look at how many good records came out in 1994, it's kind of embarrassing for like the rest of the years that may follow. Because 95 is good. I'm doing 95 at the moment. But 94 just had some like phenomenal records that came out that I still listen to now.
There's some amazing stuff in 94, but 95 and 96, they held their own. You know.
Oh, don't get me wrong. There's some brilliant stuff that like is coming out that I haven't even touched upon yet. I don't know why. There's a little special place for me for 94. I think it might be that was when I was really, really like, I think I was 13 years old. So I was really going mad into music, and I'd started buying Kerrang. And I sort of lost my mind as a teenager and then stopped studying at school because music was the most important thing, as we all probably did.
It is, absolutely.
And it still is now. It still is the most important thing.
Don't do your lessons, kids. Listen to music.
Yeah, quit school. quit school and do drugs.
And listen to White Zombie.
Oh, my God, listen to White Zombie, yes.
No, the reason that we are collaborating again is we've got to the point on your timeline where there's another free Kerrang tape, the second one that they ever did. So this one is Kerrang Presents New Metal Messiahs, new spelled N-E-W. It's not New Metal Messiahs, it's New Metal Messiahs. A tape which is sponsored by Rock City in Nottingham, which I used to frequent fairly often. Might be a bit out of the way for you. You ever been to Rock City, Stephen?
I've been there once, I think. I think I went to a club night once because I used to play in a punk band, and we played a gig at the Old Angel. So where else do you go on a Friday or a Saturday night in Nottingham. You go to Rock City, of course.
Oh, I and loved the Old Angel.
Absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it.
The Old Angel was an amazing pub.
Oh, it's a great pub. Yeah, brilliant. I feel like I've been to a lot of the premier rock clubs in the north. I'm obviously from London. I think I've been to Sheffield Lead Mills, Crazy House, Manchester. Yep. What was the one called?
Gilly's Rock World?
Gilly's Rock World, brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant night out. Yeah. the fun of playing in a punk band and then going to crappy rock nights.
Oh, that's great. Awesome. So, this was from June the 10th, 1995, I believe. So, do a bit of context for what was happening at the time. Music news, Alan Wilder leaves Depeche Mode and Stone Roses pull out of their Glastonbury headline slot after John Squire breaks his collarbone in a mountain biking accident. They're replaced by Pulp, who play a career-defining set. And arguably that's what makes them so massive. Albums released in, not necessarily that week, but in June 95. Nine Inch Nails, Further Down the Spiral. Dark Throne's Panzerfaust. The Batman Forever soundtrack. Paradise Lost, Draconian Times. Therapy, Infernal Love. Fear Factory, Demanufacture. Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill. Bjork, Post. Reef, Replenish. The Chemical Brothers, Exit Planet Dust. And Neil Young with Pearl Jam as his backing band on Mirrorball. On tour...
I've just got to cut in there and say that everything I said about 94, I take it back, and 95 is unbelievable. That Mirrorball album, Neil Young and Pearl Jam, is an incredible album. Oh my God, that record is phenomenal.
I really couldn't get into it at the time.
Really?
I got it out the library, and I wasn't into Neil Young yet. And I was like, this doesn't sound like Even Flow. years later, heard it and got it when I'd matured a bit.
That was exactly it for me. I went back and heard it. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut in. I went back and heard it as an older gent. And that record is something else.
Yeah. So on tour that month, Elvis Costello, Dave Matthews Band, Bon Jovi, supported by Van Halen. You'd go for the support band for that one, wouldn't you? Actually, in 95, you possibly wouldn't. That was Gary Cherone, wasn't it, at that point, I think? Not good.
No, 95. No, I think it was still Sammy Hagar.
Oh, okay. I thought Gary Cherone was there then.
No, I think it was still, probably hanging on by a thread, Sammy Hagar.
You'd be wishing it was 11 years ago, though, wouldn't you, if you were watching Van Halen in 95? Ugly Kid Joe, Live, The Damned, Blur, Weezer, Foo Fighters, Cardigans, Live and Sebado. The UK number one single was Robson and Jerome's Unchained Fucking Melody. The UK number one album was Pink Floyd's Pulse, which was the live album that had the LED on the sleeve, which was pretty cool, but amazingly cool if you went into a record shop where they've got an entire display rack with all of the lights blinking slightly out of sync with each other.
It was unbelievable, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I remember that record. My friend had a copy of that. And that LED blinked for about 4 or 5 years afterwards. I was quite surprised. It's quite good battery life.
Yeah, lasted a while.
You thought it would have died after about 3 weeks.
No. My dad's was still going for quite a while. And in the magazine, Paradise Lost on the cover. But if you're on the Kerrang! Back Issues feed, then you've already heard it a few days ago. That's what Stephen's episode this week was about. So if you're on the Free With This Month's issue feed, subscribe to Kerrang! Back Issues, for fuck's sake. It's excellent. And then Stephen will tell you all about what's in that particular issue. Should we get on with listening to the tape?
Oh, please. Let's do it.
It's a nice short one. There's only four tracks on it, so we're in for a quick one this evening. Here we go. We'll be right back. So first track, this is Cathedral and Vampire Sun, demo version. Demo version of the opening track to Cathedral's third album, The Carnival Bazaar. It's a little bit different to the album version. It's got a, there's a cool little 60s psychedelic intro that's not on the album version. And there's some ace bits of delay on Lee Dorian's vocals towards the end of the track. Cathedral, I fucking love. They always sound like they're the, of all of the doom metal bands, they're the one that are having the most fun. And I think most of that is Lee Dorian's absolutely fucking ridiculous vocals, basically.
Oh my God, it's amazing, isn't it? It's brilliant. I mean, that opening riff is just so symptom of the universe.
Yeah.
Black Sabbath, it's perfect. But like, obviously it's different, but I love it. Also, Kerrang says that weird intro is actually from Joe 90.
Yes, it is. Now yeah. You point that out, it is. It's the Joe 90, which had a fucking brilliant theme tune.
Yeah, because before I read this bit of Kerrang, I listened to this again, obviously, and I heard that intro, and then it goes into the song, and I'm like, what is going on? Like, this is the... Because obviously you listen to that song on the album, and that intro isn't there.
No.
It's a different intro. I was like, it sounds like bubbles are being blown with this, like, weird looping riff. I'm like, what is going on?
Jerry Anderson wouldn't give him the rights, perhaps, for using it on the proper album.
Probably not. No, probably not. I love the opening two lines of this. They really sort of, like, nail down what they're about immediately. Are you high? Are you high? I wonder, do you think they smoke the devil's lettuce? Do you think they get involved?
I believe that Cathedral were really fucking stoned.
Of course, all the time. It's amazing.
Great band, though. Lee Dorian lives in, or at least lived at some point in Coventry, and I remember getting off a bus as he got on once. I was like, it's fucking Lee Dorian, what's going on? Because I didn't realise that he lived in he should be flying around on a magic carpet.
he probably is in his brain.
Not the number 48. What? That was just weird.
I just need to mention that the solo of this song is so good. And yes, the bass tone of this song that you hear when the solo kicks in is so good. Oh my God, I really, like, genuinely love it. Also, I pulled out a line that I love where he simply says, mummified the cosmos. What a line.
You can't argue with that, can you?
Oh my God. Is it monolithic angel, unveil your king to this planet disabled, mummify the cosmos with the vision of divinity? Yeah. Oh, yes. I love that. It's awesome. So great.
Also, it's just reminded me, there's a teacher at my daughter's school called Mrs. Hopkins, and every time she gets mentioned, I have to go, I'm Matthew Hopkins, Witchfinder.
Witchfinder General.
Which amuses me anyway, but no one else. And that's all that matters. Let's go for the next track.
Of course.
This is Paradise Lost and Hallowed Land. Draconian Times, Paradise Lost's album from 95, is definitely in the top two goth metal albums ever for me. It's pretty much joint number one, I think, with Typo Negative's October Rust.
I think that's a fair shout.
Yeah.
That's a good shout. Yeah.
This would be the... I think this was the first Paradise Lost song I ever heard, although not on this tape. I'd started buying Kerrang a couple of weeks before this issue, the Green Day issue from a few weeks back, but I didn't get this tape yet. But I heard this on a Guitarist magazine CD that my dad was a subscriber for, and I used to look at the CD and check out what the weird pedal demos were and whether there was a decent music track on there to listen to. Like Corrosion Conformity were on it at some point, and Hallowed Land by Paradise Lost was on one of them at some point in 95, and it was awesome. Utterly loved it. And then I got Draconian Times out from the local library. Got it in, which was pretty cool. and taped it. So I've bought it on CD and vinyl since then. So I've made up for my youthful transgressions of home taping, killing music and all that.
That's all right. We all did it.
Draconian Times, though, it's one of those albums that only ever seems to be talked about by those of us who were there at the time. I never hear anyone younger that's like rediscovered it later on, which is a real shame. Because
it's really strange because there's been this real type of negative revival in the past 5 years where I see loads of bootleg type of negative shirts and they seem to get hailed as this, like, you know, amazing spooky band that everyone sort of is like this secret club. But you're right, Paradise Lost don't ever get mentioned in the same breaths, and it's really strange. And I'm not sure why.
I wonder if it's because Type O Negative were American and they've got like the power of Roadrunner Records behind them.
Possibly. I also feel like at the time, Paradise Lost, they just never quite. They were a big band from the Doing the Kerrangs. They're big in Germany. Apparently, they're massive in Germany.
Yeah, you're.
But they just never quite sort of. I don't know. Maybe it's not being on Roadrunner or something like that. I don't know. I feel like they're on the front cover of this magazine. You think that would be enough for a lot of people? I mean, they were a big band, don't get me wrong, but I feel like they weren't on the sort of Machine Head levels or Sepultura levels.
No.
Maybe it's because they're English? I don't know. It's who knows?
Could well be. They had 3 top 75 singles, but that was the highest they ever got. The last time got to number 60, Forever Failure to 66, and Say Just Words got to 53, which I contributed to that because I bought the 12-inch single for Say Just Words. So
nice.
I should have bought more of them.
I'm gonna be completely honest here. When it was the time in the 90s, I never listened to Paradise Lost. They were one of those bands. I think I heard like the odd song on MTV. It never really did anything for me at the time. Again, I speak about this all the time. There was just no way that I could buy every record of every band.
No.
As much as I would like to. And now, obviously, we've got Spotify, so we can go back and listen to it. And going back and listening to this song, I absolutely love it. And I've been listening to Draconian Times this week, and I'm like, what was I doing? What was I thinking? This is such a great record. The intro of this song, it doesn't remind me of it, but it has a slight Made of Stone by the Stone Roses. There's that sort of, it's quite like a mournful riff. I can't really put it into words, but it just made me think of the Stone Roses. I mean, obviously they're very, very different bands, but just the way that like riff goes.
It's a little bit psychedelic, sort of, isn't it? There's a little bit psych in there. Yeah, I can sort of say that.
But I honestly, I love this song. For me, this is the best song on this tape.
Oh, hands down. Easily. Four are great. I do like all four of the tracks, but this is the standout, definitely. Cool. Right, let's flip the tape over and go to side two already. For the next Kerrang tape that we'll be doing in the autumn, it's going to be a much longer episode.
It's the rare one, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
rare because Kerrang cares.
Oh yeah, that's it.
I think it's about 18 tracks on that one. Right, next.
The two songs I remember for that is Your Mistake, Fear Factory, and Hard Times, Machine Head, because they're both covers of old hardcore bands, aren't they? Agnostic Front and Cro-Mags.
Yeah.
Awesome. And I think like Machine Head used to do that Hard Times song live like, all the time as well.
Yeah, it is a live version, isn't it, I think?
I think so.
Yeah, it is.
I can't. Yeah. Okay.
I've listened to that it makes, relatively that makes sense. Recently. But we'll get to that in a few months' time. Right,
we will.
Let's listen to this one. Pitch Shifter, not Pitch Shifter, because they hadn't got rid of the space yet. And Nowhere Is Everywhere, Freedom of Choice mix. This is the more industrial phase of Pitch Shifter. So it was when the band name was still two words and Johnny Carter was the guitarist. I'm much more familiar with the later stuff when Jim Davis took over on guitar and they were essentially like a more metal prodigy at that point.
Same, actually.
They were like industrial punk rather than industrial metal at that point, I think.
And, yeah, I think the album that everyone had was www.pitchshifter.com.
Yes.
That seemed like that was the sort of, for them, the breakthrough one, because I just remember Genius and Microwave being everywhere. Like, yeah, every rock club you went to, they would play
WYSIWYG as well.
WYSIWYG as well, yeah, it's true. Yeah.
That's an album title that hasn't aged particularly brilliantly.
But I also think that of Pitchshifter, the band, that they're very much of a time. Kurt Hammett in the Metallica Some Kind of Monster documentary talks about if they don't put solos on the album, then it dates that to that time in music when solos weren't being put on records. And I feel like Pitchshifter are the embodiment of that, and they could only exist in that sort of era of like mid-90s, like early 90s to like late 90s as well.
Yeah.
It's just very much like where I feel like that was when the rock world and the sort of like, I don't know what to call it, dance music, electronic music, was sort of coming together. And I'll be honest, I wasn't the biggest fan of those two worlds colliding. I really liked the Prodigy, but I liked the Prodigy when they were a dance band. When they did the Fat of the Land, I went off them massively.
Okay.
I didn't like that record. I liked them when they were a rave band, you know, like White Gloves, Glow Sticks.
Jilted Generation is definitely a better record.
Oh, Jilted Generation. Yeah, and The Experience as well. I loved it. And the same with the Smashing Pumpkins, actually. When Billy Corgan thought it'd be a good idea to buy a keyboard and like, add some sort of like, like electronica stuff to them, it didn't do it for me at all.
Claim that rock really is dead.
Oh, he did, yeah.
Yeah.
He did. Oh, and what's he doing right now, Billy Corgan? Touring with the Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah.
Playing rock songs. Yeah, nice one, Billy.
He did go back on that.
He did, oh, yeah, fair enough.
The metal mixed with dance stuff like the Spawn soundtrack, I was well into. Remanufacture the Fear Factory remix album as well, and White Zombie Super Sexy Swinging Sounds. I dig synth and beats and stuff like that almost as much as guitars and noisy screaming and stuff, so when you mix them together it works for me.
Oh, I tell you what, I love them separately. I grew up listening to like pirate jungle stations because I grew up in London.
Awesome.
Like, so I used to listen to all that. Me and my brother used to go to like drum and bass raves, you know. I love like really sort of like gnarly dance music, but I just always feel like when you put them together, I don't know. I like Ministry and I like Nine Inch Nails, so I realise what I'm saying is crap and I'm a hypocrite. But there's something, I feel like those are like, they're more industrial bands, which is just sort of different.
Definitely.
I don't know. I can't really put it into words properly. I've just never been, like I had the Spawn soundtrack and it was okay, but it wasn't my favourite.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I never liked Remanufacture. I didn't like the White Zombie remix album.
They're both, looking back on it now, they're both patchy as fuck, but there's some bits on there that are great. So, yeah, I really dig this. This track is an exclusive track that, according to the issue of Kerrang, that it's from their forthcoming new album, which it wasn't. It Nowhere Is Everywhere did not appear. And as far as I can tell, the non-remix version of this track has never been released anywhere. This version, with a slightly different title, was released on the Japanese version of Earache Records' Earplug 2 sampler. It wasn't on the UK version of Earplug 2 because I had that. But yeah, it was on Japanese version of Earplug 2. I really dig it. The distorted bass sounds brilliant and the drum programming on it is amazing.
I don't know, I'm not sold with it. I did definitely like later Pitchshifter, but it just, sorry, Pitchshifter, you got to put that space in. For me, this song just doesn't really go anywhere. I can kind of see why it never landed on their albums. Their next album, it would have been, was it Infotainment?
Yes, Infotainment was released in, I think, 96. Might have been late 95.
So if it was 96, yeah, that's quite a way away from when this tape was released.
Yeah, I think they wrote
maybe they did that
songs.
Thing of they. That's it. Maybe they just wrote a ton of songs and they were like, right, they're all better than that.
Yeah.
Than that song. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I listened to it and I enjoyed it a lot, but I just felt like it was a bit, I don't know. I felt it was quite forgettable.
Yeah, that's sort of, fair. Cool. Yeah. Right, let's go for the final track on the tape already. ¶¶ This is My Dying Bride and The Cry of Mankind edit. Another band where I only really know their later stuff. I own their next record, like Gods of the Sun, and I also used to have a really cool long sleeve t-shirt that I wore loads in the late 90s. Although, looking back on it, if somebody had have asked me to name three songs, I probably would have stumbled, even though I own the album, because I only used to listen to like one or two tracks on it. This is an edited version of the opening track on their album from 95, though, and it's edited in a really weird place. It makes sense to do an edit. Have you heard the full track?
I listened to it on Spotify, yeah.
Yeah.
And that intro, so the intro for me, it sounds like it's played on like a £15 Casio keyboard from Argos.
Yeah.
It's not good. And then when I heard the Spotify, like the proper version, it sounds a lot. It sounds like it's a £30 Casio keyboard.
Well,
it sounds like a much better. It just sounds a lot better, doesn't it? Sounds a lot better.
Well, it's the same. It's just tape degradation on the version that we were listening to off the tape, because it's a 27-year-old cassette. That, you know, I've ripped to MP3 and then sent over the internet, which is why it sounds a bit dodgy.
Okay, fair enough then.
But yeah, that little intro keyboard bit. On the full album version, it basically, they play, the song's 7 minutes long itself, but then there's about 5 minutes of that bit just repeating with the sounds of waves and the sound of wind, and then occasional little synth drones appearing and guitar chords just fading in and out again.
It's quite long, isn't it?
It's very long, particularly for an opening track. I'm fine with long tracks, but it doesn't need that section to be 5 minutes long, particularly for the opening track of an album. It's a really weird decision. So I can see why they'd go for an edit, but it is quite weird that they faded it out a minute and a half before the end of the actual song portion of it. Because they only had like another verse and a half and a chorus. You know, if they'd have gone slightly longer, it would have been the full actual song bit of it. But I think that's so that side two was about the same length as side one. So I think it was more for length of tape reasons than actual musical reasons where they edited it.
And I guess those tapes were probably really cheap as well. It's probably like when you do a 7-inch, you're only allowed like a set amount of time that you can fit on it. So yeah, they probably had to like give it quite a harsh edit just to fit it on.
I'd imagine that the duplication services charge them by the length of tape, probably, because that's the main bit that they're paying for in there. I know it's probably, it's pretty much the whole point of the band, but I do always want Aaron Stainforth to cheer up a bit, because he does sound like he's on the verge of tears the whole time. He's about 30 seconds away from crying his eyes out, and, you know, I'd rather listen to Lee Dorian's maniacal howl, because he sounds like he's having fun.
But yeah, that is true.
The instrumentation's great. That big crashing guitar chord at the start, where it just kicks in, is ace. I think it'd be amazing live.
With this song, I wish that the intro had been the same, but then it had gone into a black metal song. I think if it had just gone like full Norwegian, like Dark Throne, just blast
beats.
Yeah, just blast beats and like scream. Basically, what I'm saying is, I wish this was Cradle of Filth. I think I would have preferred it more. It's okay for me. It was okay. The piano part kind of pushed it into a bit of like gothic Meatloaf territory for me, but with like Marilyn Manson singing.
Bit Steinman-esque.
That actually probably would appeal to quite a lot of people. But
yeah. Meatloaf was still in Kerrang at the time, wasn't he? He still used to get
featured.
Oh, he
was.
Yeah. I always find it really weird whenever you're reading it out, and it's like, and here's a Meatloaf bit. It's like, what? In Kerrang? What are you talking about?
And Status Quo.
Yeah.
And Gary Glitter, but we talked about him last time. I can't go back there again.
So that brings us already to the end of the tape. That was awesome. Lots of fun. We shall meet up again later in the year when there's another free cassette with Kerrang. I think it's November for the Rare Because Kerrang Cares. And then the following year, we need to do two in 2 weeks for the two Supersonic tapes.
Bloody hell. Oh, I remember those Supersonic tapes.
The Robots Out of Reboot on the cover.
Yeah, that was it. Oh, God, all of this is just bringing back memories. Like, you know when you sort of you see something or you hear something and you're like, oh yeah, like the cogs start like whirring again in my brain. I'm like, yes, I do remember that.
That's why we do
The rare cover had, was it a slab of meat on the cover?
It is, yeah, and then the inside
that's
of it's
got
called
a... rare.
Yeah, then the inside it's got a gun in a pool of blood.
Ooh, edgy.
On the inside
edgy, Karen.
On the back. Yeah.
Ooh, edgy.
Awesome. So, do you want to tell people where they can find Kerrang! Back Issues?
Yeah, sure. We're on all good podcasting platforms. On Instagram, you can get us at Kerrang! Back Issues. On Twitter, we're on KerrangPod. And email, it's KerrangBackIssues@gmail.com if you want to talk about some crap rock music like we did just then. I always call it crap rock music. It's all crap rock music, but I love it. We all love it.
It's what we're here for, man. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. That's it.
So free with this month's issue, if you're listening on the Kerrang! Back Issues feed, we are exactly the same. We're on all podcast platforms. You can find all of our previous episodes plus our other podcast, We Dig Music, on WeDigPodcast.com. And you can find us on Instagram at Free With This Month's Issue and Twitter at This Month's Issue. Because you're not allowed enough characters to put through with this month's issue, apparently. So give us a listen if you haven't already. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back next time. Bye!
See ya!
Another endearingly shambolic podcast from WeDigPodcasts.com.
Elsewhere on We Made This. We Dig Music.
This is evidence enough that I was kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Particularly because your initial choice was from 1986.
It was on a 1978 playlist. People that do year-based playlists need to calm the fuck down and check their facts. I mean, granted, I am a person that's done a year-based playlist and I need to calm down and check my fucking facts, which is fine, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
But like...
Or you can just do what I do and like just say, no, it's a compilation album that was released in that year and I'm definitely going to do it.
I can't do that because he... Yes,
no.
Chris Rea has a time machine. He released a compilation of his mid-80s tracks.
But, you know...
Earlier.
The weird thing is, so, yeah, we switched this one out quite late on in our preparation for the
last
podcast.
Last night.
And it made fuck all difference to any of our notes.
Dream Given Form, a Babylon 5 podcast.
On a science fiction heavy TV series, I'm not sure how much he can push the boundaries that way. So I think it has to be in terms of storytelling,
yeah,
and character, and progressiveness, I think. And kind of looking back at Sensei, I think that's a good way of going forward.
So what are your thoughts around the idea of the CW network being a network to pick up the Babylon 5 reboot?
I don't know whether it's the right one or not, in all honesty.
Mm.
And with the recent kind of announcement that CW's being sold, which is why the pilot script's not been picked up.
Frame to frame.
The overarching narrative of Nolan's trilogy is so good. Nolan dedicated an entire movie to us understanding Bruce Wayne and why Bruce Wayne wanted to become the embodiment of fear. That's what that groundwork is, what then allows the Dark Knight to become the incredibly tortured, bleak, like almost nihilistic beast that it is, in which there's no such thing as a hero. There are no heroes.
No, exactly. But as a question to you, are you suggesting then, if a film hypothetically was to exist without giving us the Batman Begin portion, but to exist in, I don't know, the second or third year of the Batman story, that is dark, bleak and nihilistic, if it was not to have the Batman Begins, do you think it wouldn't quite work as well as The Dark Knight?
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.